Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today, we're taking a close look at the Afrin region and the city of Aleppo in Syria, specifically how they were connected before 2010.
Right. We've got various research and reports, and we're trying to understand those links, administrative, economic, social, before the war started.
Exactly. What can these pre-war ties really tell us about the area's history?
Well, maybe start with the administration. It's quite telling. Before 2010, Afrin District was officially, you know, part of the Aleppo governorate.
Okay.
And Afrin City was the district center, overseeing lots of smaller places. So, yeah, administratively, it fell directly under Aleppo. It's about, what, 63 kilometers away?
Seems pretty clear cut then. Was it always like that?
Ah, well, it has deep roots. Mm. This setup goes back to when the Syria-Turkey border was drawn in 1923. Afrin got included in French-administered Syria specifically as part of the state of Aleppo, and that just sort of continued after Syria became independent. And even before that, during the Ottoman era, the Afrin Plateau was actually known as the Sancak of the Kurds. So there's this historical acknowledgement of its identity, even if defined differently back then.
Okay, so administratively linked, but how did that work day to day on the ground?
Well, yeah, it was part of Aleppo governorate, but the Syrian Ba'athist state kept a, let's say, firm grip on Afrin. That control was exercised through the governorate in Aleppo.
How so?
Primarily through appointed officials, the police, security forces. And these people were often brought in from outside the local Kurdish population.
Right, so not necessarily locals running local affairs.
Exactly. It ensured state authority, definitely. But it also, understandably, led to feelings of marginalization among the Kurdish residents there.
Because of the Ba'athist ideology.
Yes. The party pushed Arab nationalism hard. Any expressions of Kurdish identity, viewed with suspicion, often. There were local leaders, sure, but they had to operate within the state's framework.
Let's shift to politics, then. Was there Kurdish sentiment brewing under the surface, despite this control?
Oh, absolutely. Kurdish nationalism was definitely present in Afrin before 2011. The PKK, for instance, had a really strong influence there for about two decades.
Really? When was that?
From the late 1970s right up until 1998. That's when the Adana Agreement happened and the PKK leadership had to leave Syria.
Wow, significant influence. What did that look like locally?
Well, reports from that time suggest the PKK had quite a bit of sway over local politics and considerable public support, too. And even after they officially left Syria, the ideas, the ideology, it didn't just disappear. It actually led to the PYD forming underground in 2003, mostly by former PKK members.
So overt politics were suppressed, but there was this undercurrent.
Precisely. And these undercurrents really shaped how locals felt about and interacted with the Syrian government. The government, in turn, often clamped down. Like after the Qamishli events in 2004, there was unrest in Afrin, too, sadly, with fatalities.
Okay, let's move to the economy. I've heard olives were incredibly important.
Central is the word. Absolutely central. Afrin was famous for its olive groves. We're talking something like 14 million trees, many of them ancient. A huge producer of high-quality olives and, crucially, olive oil.
And that oil, where did it primarily go?
A large chunk went straight to Aleppo. It was vital for making Aleppo soap.
The famous soap.
Exactly. That product has such a long history. The soap-making families in Aleppo really depended on olives coming from areas like Afrin. Before 2011, estimates suggest maybe 75% of Afrin's population worked in agriculture. Olives were the absolute backbone.
So a strong economic connection, maybe even a reliance.
Definitely interdependence. Afrin supplied the raw material Aleppo needed for key industries. And it wasn't just shipping olives out. Afrin had its own related industries, too. Oil presses, even some soap making itself. So another layer to it.
Was it just olives, or did Afrin supply other things, too?
Oh, no. The land there is fertile. They grew citrus fruits, pomegranates, other things, too. It all reinforced Afrin's role as a major supplier for Aleppo. Before the crisis, people often called Afrin Aleppo's main economic supplier, especially for agriculture.
It sounds like Afrin was kind of the breadbasket or maybe the olive basket for Aleppo.
That's a good way to put it. Aleppo was the big economic engine in northern Syria, right? Mm. So it naturally pulled in agricultural goods from its surroundings, and Afrin was a huge part of that. The town of Afrin itself actually started as a market back in the 19th century. Its whole history is tied to being a trading hub for the region's agriculture.
So Aleppo was the industrial center, Afrin the agricultural one, broadly speaking.
Yeah, broadly. Aleppo was Syria's number one industrial city. Afrin's economy was mainly agricultural, but it wasn't only that. They had local textile work, traditional crafts like carpet making too. But Aleppo's sheer economic gravity created demand that Afrin's farms helped meet.
What about people? Did workers move between the two?
Yes, absolutely. Labor mobility was another key economic link. Aleppo, being this major urban and industrial hub, naturally drew workers from rural places like Afrin. You'd often have men from the Kurdog region traveling to Aleppo for manual labor jobs.
And would they stay? Or go back and forth?
Often back and forth. They might return to their villages for weekends, or definitely during busy agricultural times, like the olive harvest season.
So it's not just goods moving, but people's livelihoods tied together.
Exactly. It was a vital economic connection, but it also meant more social and cultural mixing between the areas. We don't have super precise stats from before 2011, but this kind of rural to urban migration towards big cities like Aleppo was a standard pattern in Syria.
And probably driven by necessity, too.
Likely, yes. Rural Syria was facing rising unemployment and poverty before 2011, so moving to find work in a place like Aleppo made a lot of sense.
Ugh. Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rojbosh Hannah. Oh, the smell of this chai is wonderful today. It has that perfect blend of spices. Not too bitter. Definitely doesn't need more sugar. That's exactly what we need right now. Let's take a quick break and enjoy this. Okay, welcome back. Before that lovely chai break, we were deep into the economic ties between Afrin and Aleppo. Let's switch gears now and look at the social side, the demographics, before 2010.
Right. Demographically, Afrin district was, well, overwhelmingly Kurdish. Estimates put the Kurdish population somewhere between 90% and 97%.
Wow, that high.
Yes. It was often just described as homogeneously Kurdish. The Syrian census in 2004 counted about 172,000 people there. Then a 2010 census reported a much higher number, over 500,000, but still overwhelmingly Kurdish. Though it's crucial to remember, Syrian censuses didn't usually record ethnicity. Kurds weren't officially recognized as a distinct group.
So who made up the other few percent?
Small numbers of Arabs, Turkmens, Armenians, Yazidis. Some Arabs had moved in from nearby areas like Manbij. And an interesting historical note. Back in the 1930s, some Kurdish Alevis fleeing persecution in Turkey settled in one of Afrin's sub-districts, Mabatli. So some internal diversity, but still within that Kurdish-majority context.
Okay, so Afrin had a very clear demographic profile. What about Aleppo City?
Aleppo City was, of course, much more diverse overall, a real mix, but it also had a significant Kurdish population.
Concentrated in certain areas.
Yes, particularly in neighborhoods like Al-Ashrafiya and Sheikh Maksud. And these urban Kurdish communities, they definitely kept ties with rural Kurdish areas like Afrin. You know, the Kurdish presence in both Afrin, the Kurda area, and in Aleppo City goes back centuries. We mentioned the Ottoman Sankak of the Kurds for Afrin. There's a long history there.
And how did these communities, rural and urban, connect socially?
Kinship networks were huge, really strong across Syria generally, actually. They helped people access resources, services, everything. These networks definitely linked Afrin's villages with relatives or contacts in Aleppo. And another factor was Sufi religious networks. They also played a role in social and cultural exchange, linking rural spots like Afrin with urban centers like Aleppo.
How did those work?
Sufi lodges, called zariyas, existed in both places. They kind of provided a structure that helped people move between the two. It could help rural migrants settle into Aleppo, but also stay connected to home.
So Aleppo wasn't just an economic magnet, but a hub for other things, too.
For sure. As the big regional city, Aleppo offered specialized services you just couldn't get easily in Afrin. Higher education is a key example.
Right. Students who travel.
Yes, many Kurdish students from Afrin went to university in Aleppo. Before the conflict, it was a relatively easy trip, only about 50 kilometers.
Makes sense. And healthcare.
Specialized healthcare, too, most likely. People from Afrin and other rural areas would have looked to Aleppo for more advanced medical services. That was the pattern in Syria. Big cities had the better hospitals and specialists. We don't have hard data specifically on Afrin residents using Aleppo services pre-2011, but given the usual infrastructure gap between cities and rural areas, that dependency seems pretty certain.
What about shared culture? Did that bridge the two areas?
Definitely. The Kurdish communities in both Afrin and Aleppo shared a lot culturally. Language, primarily, they mostly spoke the Kurmanji dialect of Kurdish. And this was despite state policies trying to suppress Kurdish culture and language publicly.
Like what kind of policies?
Things like banning Kurdish in public schools or replacing Kurdish place names with Arabic ones. But Kurdish cultural life, it persisted. In Aleppo, the Ashrafieh neighborhood was known as a real center for Kurdish social life, culture. You'd hear Kurdish music, language spoken commonly there.
And the movement of people kept this alive.
Exactly. People moving back and forth for work, for education, visiting family. It ensured constant cultural exchange, reinforcing that shared identity. Plus, traditional celebrations like Newroz, the Kurdish New Year, were huge cultural markers, even if the state sometimes cracked down on them. And don't forget the religious diversity within Afrin itself, Sunni Muslims, Yazidis, Alevis, that added its own unique threads to the cultural fabric.
So putting this all together, how did the bigger picture in Syria affect this Afrin-Aleppo relationship?
Well, you have to place it in the context of Syria nationally before 2010. By the late 2000s, the country was grappling with growing poverty, unemployment, big gaps between rural and urban areas. Economic reforms hadn't really lifted everyone, especially in the countryside. And there were persistent problems, corruption, workforce education issues, infrastructure gaps. Plus, from 2006 to 2010, there was that severe drought that hit agricultural areas really hard, adding more socioeconomic strain.
So, tough times nationally.
Definitely. And those national problems would have absolutely shaped daily life and the interactions between people in Afrin and Aleppo. Politically, too, after Bashar al-Assad took over in 2000, there were some initial hopes for reform. But ultimately, political openings were limited, tensions grew, the security state remained strong, dissent wasn't tolerated.
And specifically regarding the Kurds, what were the state policies like towards them?
Well, Syrian governments for a long time had policies of Arabization, assimilation, basically trying to suppress non-Arab identities, and the Kurds were a major target. This meant restrictions on language, culture, as we mentioned, but also things like demographic manipulation, making many Kurds stateless through censuses, though that hit hardest in the Jazeera region, less so in Afrin, and sometimes resettling Arabs into Kurdish areas to change the demographic balance. That was the Arab Belt Project, again, mainly in Jazeera.
So Afrin experienced this too.
It experienced the general marginalization and suppression of Kurdish rights, yes, but maybe fewer of the really intense Arabization campaigns compared to other Kurdish regions. Still, the way the regime administered these areas through security services, through officials often brought in from outside, it limited local Kurdish participation in governing their own affairs. That definitely created underlying tension, but it also perhaps strengthened local Kurdish identity and those informal political networks we talked about.
Okay, so pulling it all together then.
Yeah.
What's the main takeaway about Afrin and Aleppo before 2010?
I'd say the connection was really complex, multifaceted. You had the official administrative link, yes, but also this really significant economic reliance, especially with olives, and deep social and cultural ties connecting Kurdish communities.
So integrated but distinct.
Exactly. Afrin was part of Aleppo governorate under state control, but it absolutely kept its strong Kurdish identity, its own local politics simmering beneath the surface. The economy was crucial, Afrin feeding into Aleppo's industries. Socially, people were linked by family, culture, moving back and forth for school or work. And all this happened within a state that was often hostile to Kurdish identity, which in turn fostered this resilient local culture in Afrin.
So this pre-2010 period set the stage in a way.
It did. It created a situation where Afrin was connected to Aleppo and Damascus, but also had its own strong local fabric, its agricultural base. These things would influence how Afrin reacted later when the conflict started and state power crumbled. But those deep historical ties to Aleppo also really highlight just how much the later fragmentation of Syria impacted both places.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? When you have these kinds of deeply rooted economic and social relationships, how do they change? Or maybe how do they break when conflict and massive political upheaval hit? That's a question that echoes far beyond just Afrin and Aleppo, prompting us to consider how these historical connections continue to shape regions going through profound changes even today.